Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday morning on the Genesis Communication Network, we strive to expose and condemn the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, if you'll give us a couple of hours each day, we'll open your eyes and change your mind towards these things upon which most people foolishly and counterproductively cling. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, our mission will be to help you actually understand what is occurring behind the headlines. We will reveal the motivations of the perpetrators and share what you can do to protect your family, all while predicting how these events will shape America and the world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh, yes, that is God's name, on His terms, by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching. So that with God's guidance, you will be able to replace religion with reason. Our phone number for those who would like to question or criticize, even affirm anything that I have to say this morning, is 877-300-7645. Israel did something that I thought was absolutely brilliant. It might well be the single best response to stupidity that we have witnessed in 100 years. Israel authorized the construction of 3,000 more housing units in occupied East Jerusalem, this particular article reads, and in the West Bank, according to Israeli officials. I would strike the word occupied, but other than that, the reporting is accurate. It is also speeding up the processing of 1,000 planning permissions. The decision, came in this case a day after the UN voted overwhelmingly, more than 20-1, to upgrade the so-called mythical Palestinian people to the mythical status of a Palestinian state at the United Nations. The U.S. said that the expansion plan was counterproductive and it would make it harder to resume the peace talks. Israel told the so-called mythical Palestinian people that if they chose that course as opposed to negotiating directly with them, that there would be a consequence. Now, the consequence is the building of homes. It has the world just up in a twit, and there's nothing that Israel could have done that would have been wiser. This is a quote. We reiterate our long-standing opposition to settlements and East Jerusalem construction and announcements, White House spokesman Tommy Vicar said. So the United States is opposed to housing. Well, we should have known that. Look at the last recession. It was a direct result of a housing crisis mismanaged by the American government. And so we should expect that the United States would be opposed to housing. The United States, mind you, doesn't seem to be opposed to terrorism or to missile attacks on civilian targets because it's continuing to pay the so-called mythical Palestinian people millions of dollars a year. Earlier, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called for an end to the settlement building and a return to the peace talks. Oh, too bad, pal. You were played for a fool. You decided that since Hamas got so much credit in their attack on Israel, and you were left out in the cold, no longer loved by ruthless Muslim thugs, that you would trump him with this United Nations vote that Israel said would be foolish. And you did it anyway, and you got egg all over your face. Congratulations. Now you want to return to the peace talks. Sure. Plans to build settlements in the area known as E1 are strongly opposed by the mythical people known as the Palestinians, who say development will cut the West Bank into two, preventing the creation of a contiguous Palestinian state. There are no such thing as Palestinians. There is no place called Palestine. They are simply jihadist Muslims that are being used by the rest of the Islamic world, because the Quran is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. Now, the reason that Yisrael chose this place is that Israel leaders know that if they were to allow a contiguous Palestinian state, it would be the end of Israel. It would cut Israel into two. There's only one way to do that, and that is to literally dissect Israel into two. The world doesn't give two hoots that Israel would no longer have a contiguous state. All they care about is connecting Gaza and the so-called West Bank. That's what the world wants to do. And doing that would not only sever Israel in two, but it would sever the nation at the place where 70% of its people live. And if you can imagine what happened when the United States and other nations cajoled Israel into giving up control of Gaza, previously giving up control of the Sinai, with the Sinai now being the staging area for munitions and Gaza being the launching area, what would happen if the United States and other world countries forced Israel to give up the high ground of the West Bank, uniting Gaza, Sinai, and the West Bank? How long would it take it before Muslims began their unending military assault on Israel? 5 seconds? 10 seconds? A day? And so Israel just said, I'm going to trump you on this one. That's where we're going to build 3,000 homes. This is the next quote. It is an act of Israeli aggression against a state, and the world needs to take up its responsibility, said Palestinian official Hanan Ashri, as he reported this to the AFP. An act of aggression, building homes. Imagine that. The world has come so upside down that it, 20-1, recognized a mythical people in a mythical place and rewarded terrorism with the acknowledgement of state status. And now it is an act of aggression to build homes. It is brilliant by Israel, and it shows the world to be purely hypocritical. Early on Friday, Israeli government spokesperson Mark Regev said that the United Nations vote was negative political theater and that it hurt peace. Of course it did. The General Assembly voted 138-9 to recognize a mythical people, the so-called Palestinians, as a non-member observer state, with 41 states abstaining. There's only two influences between Muslims living in the West Bank and Muslims living in Gaza. In the West Bank, they are controlled by the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which is a terrorist organization. And in Gaza, they are controlled by Hamas, an equally ruthless terrorist organization. What do you think the chances were of improving the likelihood of peace by recognizing two disjointed groups of Islamic terrorists with state status? The Palestinians can now take part in UN debates and potentially join bodies like the International Criminal Court. The Palestinian President Abbas said it was the last chance to save the two-state solution. Right. So the last chance to save the two-state solution is to get the United Nations to side with terrorism. And yet that two-state solution is destroyed, according to Abbas, by building homes. Here's another article. Same story, different venue. Israel faced concerted criticism from Europe on Monday over Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's decision to expand building after the United Nations' de facto recognition of Palestinian statehood. Britain, France, and Sweden summoned UN ambassadors into their respective capitals to hear deep disapproval of the plan to erect 3,000 more homes in the quote-unquote occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. So here's Europe, with France voting in favor, Sweden voting in favor of rewarding the terrorists, Britain doing what Britain does because it doesn't have a backbone, abstaining, and they call the Israeli ambassador in to rag on him or her. You know, Europe voted almost unanimously in favor of either rewarding the PLO and Hamas or abstaining. And so the very fact that this has tweaked the nose of the Europeans, so much the better. Ahead of a Netanyahu visit this week, Germany, considered Israel's closest ally in Europe, they abstained, urged it to refrain from expanding settlements. Russia has said it viewed the Israeli moves with serious concern. Why? Russia has to side, well, it doesn't have to, but they have chosen to side with Iran because of financial interests and therefore against Israel. Angered by the UN General Assembly upgrading on Thursday of the so-called mythical people, called Palestinians, being given a status in the world body of observer entity to changing from observer entity to non-member state, calling a gang of Islamic terrorists a state, Israel said the next day that it would build new dwellings for settlers. Such construction in the, by the way, at Barren Hills. And I've probably pulled 20 articles on this story. There's only one that mentioned the fact that these settlements are being built on barren hills. There's nothing being swept away. There's no Palestinian homes being destroyed. There's nobody being moved out of the way. All 3,000 homes are being built on barren hills. The United States said that it would bisect the West Bank and cut Palestinians from Jerusalem and further dim the hopes for a contiguous state. Yet destroys the hopes for a contiguous state. That's the intent. And Israel is never going to give up Jerusalem. Never. The settlement plan, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said would deal, quote, an almost fatal blow to the two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. You know, there is an Israeli-Palestinian conflict only because the Palestinians continue to act like Islamic terrorists and attack Israel. Building homes, if that deals a fatal blow to a resolution, then the problem is with the attackers, not with their victims. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We will return to this particular story and consider it next from CNN now that we've considered Reuters and the BBC. Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. For those who would like to call in and add to this discussion, our number is toll-free, 877-300-7645. It's interesting that these 3,000 homes are being built on a barren hillside. I suspect that hillside may have a watershed, if you will, into the Valley of Hinnom. Hinnom is an interesting term in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It's Gah Hinnom, which means the Valley of Hinnom. It is often transliterated Gehenna because of a Greek transliteration of the Valley of Hinnom. Gehenna is a reference to the negative nature of Sheol, where that which is rubbish and trash and poison is prevalent, and where the remnant of religious malfeasance, religious worship is prevalent. Yah speaks of the Valley of Hinnom as the place where the Canaanites would sacrifice their own children to their wannabe gods. And what's interesting is, of course, that we're talking about homes being built here. And so you look at a home, okay, now nothing really threatening about carpet. There's nothing really threatening about a roof tile. There's nothing really threatening about electricity and lights and running water. But these homes will have flushing toilets, and I'm fairly certain that with the fact that water flows from up to down, the rubbish, as was the case in Jerusalem for years, will flow into the Valley of Hinnom, and therefore Gehenna. So there may even be a scriptural overtone to this whole thing.
You see? Act of aggression.
Act of aggression. They're going to flush their toilets and say, take that, you mythical Palestinian. There you go. Moving on to the CNN story on this same account. Britain, who abstained, they didn't have the backbone to do the right thing, summoned Israeli's ambassadors on Monday into the Parliament, and they called building the homes, plans to build homes, deplorable, saying that it threatens the two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. They can't even accurately address the Muslims, accurately address the reason that the Muslims want to destroy Israel, and they call building homes deplorable. You know, the colonial age of Great Britain, that was deplorable. Building homes, not so much. It is the latest fallout after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu authorized planning. By the way, he hasn't spoke on this. There is no document traced to Benjamin Netanyahu that I'm aware of at this point. But the announcement came from the Israeli government and most certainly had his approval. If it did, Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu, a name means Yah gives, Yah's gift, is a very, very bright man. It was viewed as retaliatory after the Palestinian Authority won a UN bid. Perfect. I mean, Israel wanted to do this, wanted to build the settlements because it views, and rightly so, Jerusalem as its capital, and it wants a buffer between the Muslims that want to destroy all of Israel and kill them, and homes provide a wonderful buffer. They are non-aggressive. There's a positive contribution, particularly when they're built on barren land, and this provocative act by the mythical people known as the Palestinians and the world supporting them to reward terrorism, this is a perfect time to authorize this. The United States and a number of European nations called Israel to roll back the settlement plan. Yeah, we don't want to build homes. We want everyone dependent. That's what we want. If everyone is dependent and nobody is doing the right thing, then the whole world will be eating out of our hands. Netanyahu has not publicly acknowledged the approval of the new construction, but a senior government official has said that the prime minister signed off on the building of 3,000 housing units in East Jerusalem and has authorized planning and zoning for future construction in the West Bank town of Ma'ale Adonim. There was also a report that settlers had moved into a building in a Palestinian neighborhood in East Jerusalem. Oh, my God. Can you believe it? That they moved into a building. Wow. That peace is doomed now. Peace Now, an Israeli settlement watch organization. You know, the one thing about Israelis is they are as disjointed as a two-headed goony bird. They are as likely to do that which is counterproductive to them as they are that which is productive. So there is a Peace Now Israeli settlement organization which just would prefer to give the Muslims everything they want, which would make all Jews instant victims of them, easier prey, called it a dangerous provocation. Yes, you can't ever run away from us all. Good morning. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yetta. Our number for those who wish to engage in our discussion is 877-300-7645. This next story is a few days old, but it bears repeating. Another 40 people were murdered, and twice that many were mutilated by a series of car bomb explosions in southeastern Damascus. This time, the state said that terrorists were behind the blast, and the state was correct. Islamic terrorists. These were suicide bombings. The very rebellion that the United States announced over the weekend that it was now recognizing because it has an Islamic imam as the chief general and president over it, self-appointed by you, and mind you, and approved by the dictators that surround Syria, places like Saudi Arabia, where there is a fiefdom and a dictator, Kuwait, fiefdom and dictator, Qatar, fiefdom and dictator, this Islamic cleric, happens to be, of course, a Sunni Islamic cleric from Damascus, is now viewed as being the head potentate of all the Sunni Islamic jihadists. Well, it's his jihadists that just killed scores of innocent civilians with suicide bombers. And the United States now wants to give weaponry, rockets, rocket-propelled grenades, 50-caliber machine guns, that sort of thing, missiles to the suicide bombers. This district in Damascus is primarily Druze and Christian. Now, you see, the Druze are on the side of Assad. They are not on the side of the quote-unquote rebels, because the Druze are comprised of what is the second largest of the various Shiite denominations. They kind of a blend of Shiite Islam and Gnosticism, and therefore they are allied with Assad, because with Assad being a secular dictator with Shiite influence, he is able to protect them. The same thing is true with Christians. Now, there isn't a religious connection, but the Christians know that Assad, as a secular dictator, has prevented Muslims from killing them, and that if the Sunni rebels prevail, that the Christians will be wiped out. Their lands will be stolen, their women will be raped, their children will be enslaved, and the men will be murdered. And so the reason that the Sunnis, the jihadists that America and Europe are arming, decided to detonate suicide bombs in this southeastern district of Damascus, Syria's capital, is because the victims were Druze and Christians. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, by the way, which is just amazing, on, I don't know if it was Friday or on Thursday, I shared an article whereby this new imam, the Islamic cleric that had been declared to be the head of the Sunni rebellion, said that his goal was to unify the Druze, the Christians, the Assyrians, and he went on with his list. And, of course, his rebellion then detonated suicide bombs in the midst of his mythical coalition. No group said it was behind the bombings, and there was no immediate military or government target, which means that the bombings were perpetrated by Sunni jihadists, and because A, Damascus is the capital of the existing regime, and B, the Druze and Christians are allies of the existing regime, but it means that the so-called rebels are indiscriminate. They would, if anything, don't care whether or not they're killing civilians who are not even taking part in their revolution, or attacking a military target. There was no military target anywhere near the suicide bombers. The population of this area, it goes on to be redundant, saying is Christian and Druze, and then they explain that Druze are an offshoot of Islam. Actually, to understand them, they are a blend of the Gnosticism, which kind of was spiritualism, that is a derivative of Plato's separation of perfect and imperfect worlds, mirror images of kinds of things. Paul, for example, if you read through his circular reasoning, was most likely a Gnostic. Gnosticism blended with a mythical interpretation of Shia Islam is the basis of the Druze religion. The Gnosticism, by the way, had an enormous influence on Christianity as well. Few members of Syria's minority groups have supported the revolt against President Bashar al-Assad. They say few. Boy, what an idiot of a journalist. None. The only group that is opposed to and fighting against President Bashar al-Assad is a majority, the Sunnis. They are a majority. They're fighting a proxy war against Iran in Syria. And then they say they are fearful of their future if the country's majority Sunni Muslim community chooses Islamist leadership to replace decades of secular rule. They aren't fearful. They know the consequence. They know that it will be the end of them. And we don't even have to wait to see if the Sunni Muslim community is going to choose Islamic leadership. The United States, Europe, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, and others just decided it in advance. The leader of this revolt is an Islamic cleric, an imam from a Damascus mosque. Elsewhere on Wednesday, activists posted video footage online apparently showing a government warplane being shot down. And if it was shot down, then these various Muslims, Sunni Muslim terrorists, who are suicide bombers killing civilians, have been given ground-to-air missiles manufactured in the United States through channels in Saudi Arabia. Coming just a day after a helicopter was reported to have been shot down, it suggests the rebel fighters may be starting to obtain effective weapons to counter the government monopoly on air power, our correspondent says. Yeah, they're being given missiles. And what do you think they're going to do with those missiles if they were to overthrow Assad? Who would the enemy be then? Can you say the United States, Europe, and Israel? It's very much like giving the high ground of Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler. Czechoslovakia at the time was the world's second leading manufacturer of war material, and we gave the missiles and bomb-making capability to Nazi Germany. Turning to a neighboring country, Kabul, Afghanistan, police in northeastern Kaduz province have arrested two men suspected of the decapitation of a 15-year-old girl. She was decapitated because she rejected a marriage proposal. In other words, women aren't free to choose in an Islamic country because they have Islamist leaders who are poisoned by the Quran and Hadith. One of the suspects had proposed to the girl through her family last year, but she had rejected him, so he and other family members cut off her head. The two men allegedly attacked and killed her on Monday, about 100 yards from her house while she was bringing water for her family. Yep, killing an unarmed girl, cutting off her head, is the normal behavior in the world of Islam. The suspects, the additional suspects that aided in this brutal murder, were relatives of the girl. Kanduz is the same province where four Afghan police officers this month were sentenced, two of them for 16 years, for raping a woman. You know, they weren't sentenced for raping little boys, which is something they do with reckless abandon. I guess you'd have to put the entire Afghani police force in jail if raping little boys was considered a crime. But they were actually jailed for raping little girls. The Interior Ministry, a separate entity from the Afghan National Police, that says that if the militia is unchecked, rapes will be ubiquitous. But it also said that the girl's mother said that the rape of their daughter had brought such shame on the family that it, had it not been for the government intervening, the daughter who was the victim of the rape would have been killed. You see, in Islam, the rapist isn't tried isn't prosecuted. It's the rape victim. And so the in this very unique case of the Interior Ministry intervening, the perpetrators of the rape were actually arrested, as opposed to having the rape victim killed. Another story, this one from Reuters. It is in Iraq that we turn our attention now, considering the wonderful world of Islam. I mean, there's just nothing better than recognizing another Islamic state, because such wonderful things occur in the world of Islam. Bombs in two majority Shiite Muslim cities in southern Iraq killed more than a score of people on Thursday, police said. Scores more were wounded in the blast, which struck during a month that is of special significance to Shiite Muslims, who are often targeted by Sunni Muslim insurgents. Nearly 2,000 people have been killed in Iraq so far this year, following last year's December withdrawal of U.S. troops. Although violence, this they always have this. This is like, all right, you're going to write an article on Iraq. You have to put in this, and you have to put it in without thought. It is the standard disclaimer. Although violence is far lower than during the sectarian slaughter of 2006 and 2007, insurgents have carried out at least one big attack a month this year. Let me tell you something, folks. We will return and consider what prompted the sectarian slaughter of 2006 and 2007, because it was long after the U.S. invasion, and also this notion that there's only one attack per month this year. There are actually dozens of attacks every day. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths, we were speaking of the sectarian slaughter that occurred in Iraq in 2006 and 2007. You know, what's interesting is I did a long study of Iraq pre- and post-American invasion. The United States invaded Iraq in 2003. We did so based on a series of lies, many of them promoted by George W. Bush, others promoted by Colin Powell. All of what they said turned out to be untrue. George W. Bush claimed that the smoking gun would be a nuclear bomb that was being constructed in Iraq as a result of a large yellowcake uranium purchase by Saddam Hussein. He knew at the time it was a lie. He also said that that the reason we had to invade Iraq is because that Al Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were buds, and that they that Iraq was harboring Al Qaeda. Nothing could be further from the truth. Al Qaeda and Saddam Hussein's government were arch enemies. They were not allies. Colin Powell then went to the United Nations and presented a whole swath of myths, of course, that the United Nations swallowed, because they are that kind of individual, about weapons of mass destruction being moved here, there, and everywhere clandestinely around Iraq, also turned out to be a lie. And so in 2003, we invaded Iraq. As a result of our invasion, 1 million people have died, and thousands of Americans' lives have been sacrificed in addition to that, making a bad situation worse, because what we essentially did is we gave Iraq to Iran, which is why we are now fighting a war, and why the United States is trying to figure out how it engages in a war in Syria. The Syrian war is a direct result of Saudi Arabia being uncomfortable that Iran has been empowered because the United States gave Iraq to Iran. Now, prior to our invasion, there were two very minor, on average, if you go back decades, there were two very minor terrorist acts perpetrated in Iraq each year. Usually three or four people were killed. After the United States invasion of Iraq, that shot up to the point where there were thousands of terrorist assaults every day. It was, you know, the factor was millions to one, the difference. And then it was instant. in terms of the of our invasion of Iraq rather than bringing peace, magnified by thousands of times terrorist activity in Iraq. Of course, that became at an all-time high in 2006 and 2007, where the Shiites had been empowered, they had been equipped with weapons, and the Sunnis, which had previously been empowered, were fighting back with everything they had. The United States then came up with this marvelous idea that we would provide weapons and ammunition and money to the Sunni Mujahideen, to the Sunni jihadists, with the promise that they would use these guns only to attack more fundamentalist Sunnis. Well, it's those very guns and jihadists that turned what were peaceful protests in Syria into an armed conflict. 40,000 people are dead as a result of that stupidity by the United States. And ever since the high water mark of sectarian slaughter, this would be Shia and Sunni Islam, fulfilling the scriptural prophecy of their hand will be raised against their brother and their brother's hand will be raised against them, that following that, terrorism has decreased to a roaring boil. It still is at a level where there are scores of suicide bombings and other terrorist acts perpetrated in civilian communities in Iraq every day. Now we read the tensions between Shiite, Kurdish, and Sunni factions in Iraq's power-sharing government. There is no power-sharing government. The Kurds, who are principally Sunni Muslims, have said, just leave us alone. We don't want anything to do with the rest of you. We'll just hang out here in the north. You all fight among yourselves. We just opt out. There is no power sharing. And the Sunnis opted out of the government as well. They have no representation. And so there is no power sharing government. It is Holy Shiite, and the Shiite parties are controlled by the mullahs in Tehran. In terms of stupidity, it may have been the single greatest strategic blunder that any one nation has ever made in terms of what the United States did in Iraq to give that country to Iran. And as a result, terrorism has increased radically. And what we read in the news is just another example of when you act stupidly, bad things happen. We'll return with the second half of Shattering Myths in a moment.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity.